Today on ABCDTOS, the Gamesters of Triskelion.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to ABCDTOS. As far as we know, it's the only podcast that's going alphabetically through all the episodes of Star Trek, the original series. I'm Pete 3 Taylor.
I'm Tom Taylor.
I'm John Engel.
And I'm Joe Mazel.
And today we are talking about the Gamesters of Triskelion, which I will often mispronounce because it's, I mean, it's a real word, but it's not a real, you know what I mean.
What do you mean, Gamester?
Sure. Yeah, I'm like, of? The Gamesters of Triskelion.
The Gamestars. Yeah, it's a strange word. It is a real word. I've never heard anybody say Gamester before.
Oh, no, I was talking about Triskelion.
Oh, I see.
That's when you have three.
Yes, that is a real word.
That is a real word, which every time, you know, again, like a lot of things, I Star Trek first and then the rest of the world came after. Like, oh, look, that's a real thing. Look, somebody named Shakespeare wrote about this, too.
Shakespeare?
But yeah, it's a Triskelion.
Yeah, he's the guy who created a Shake Shack.
Motif consisting of three spirals. It's often like the Isle of Man. Their flag is like a Triskelion of three legs. I believe that still counts as that, right? But, yeah, that's, and, Gamester, originally the episode was going to be called, the Gamesters of Pentathlon, which I guess they were like, you know what? Let's make that three instead of five. We save money on the brand.
I thought you were going to say like Fistful of Quatloos or something.
Yeah. Oh,
it'll look good on our bottom line.
Yeah.
God, there should be an episode called that in one of the Star Trek series, right?
Yeah.
Fistful. I mean, it's just another one of the Western Spectre of the Gun ripoff episodes.
Yeah.
Well, you got Fistful of Data's Next Generation, possibly the worst episode ever.
Don't touch it. It's gold.
I'm sorry, but Worf in like a Festus, a Worf in a Festus hat. I think it's like Festus from Gunsmoke hat.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I'm telling you, every time I hear that title, all I think of is the little plastic Alexander accessory. I get sad.
The higher, the fewer.
Gamesters of Triskelion, which in my notes I wrote, AKA the one with Lady Gaga. Yeah. It was originally, it's season 2, episode 16 in release order, season 2, episode 17 in production order. Mm. Originally aired January 5th, 1968, exactly 1 year after the previous G episode, the only other G episode. The two G episodes both aired on January 5th, 67
this
to 68.
This is insane.
We planned this.
Or G-Day, they called it.
Yeah,
around
G-Day.
The Desilu.
they did until Toho sued them and for little purposes. And,
Paul Hogan was just like, can I say that now?
Paul Hogan can't say Godzilla?
He can't. It's a weird... But why do I always think that this is season 3? And I guess I'll tell you why, but
I can figure out
it feels like
why.
Season 3. I went all the way. I was like on Amazon. I'm like, there's no way it's not season 3. And I'm going all the way through. I'm like, son of a bitch, it's season 2. What's going on?
This and Omega Glory, I'm always just like, yeah, they're season 3 episodes.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're season 2. But they're, it turns out that they are after, what's his name? And I'm calling the page back up. The main producer, the guy in charge of everything.
Gene Kuhn?
Gene Kuhn.
No, because that would be silly if I forgot that.
Lucille Ball.
Lucas?
Oh.
Fred Freiberger.
Red Fox.
It was Red
Robert
Fox.
Robert Evans.
Raymond Burr.
William Shatner. He's a big dummy.
Sterling Hayden.
No, there was that production change in this. Right, where the one guy was, oh boy, how am I flubbing this so much? Because it's for me.
Robert R. Justman?
Robert Justman?
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Irvin Winkler.
Did he leave that early?
I think he was already on his way out. And yes, here we go. No, Justman was involved with this one, definitely, because he made a change that we'll get to in a second. I don't know. I have
his
it.
Underwear.
I had it written down here somewhere that basically this is like basically the. The behind-the-scenes changes that take effect in season 3 started here, which is why it feels like season 3.
Oh, okay.
These last couple of season 2 episodes, the writing was already on the wall. The people behind the scenes were changing.
Certainly wasn't in the scripts. Hey!
Hey! good. Mm-hmm. I would like to say that I think it makes us very good Star Trek fans that we picked up on the season three feel of it.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty finely tuned as Star Trek fans.
Well, this is the episode in
a whiff of season three on this. Technically, it's a season two, but
there's got season three in here.
This is the episode where they canceled the show, too, right? They were shooting this episode when they canceled the show prior to the revival from the letter writing campaign. This was the one where they got the news, I believe. Yep.
Oh, wow.
So there's also a bit of a sea change situation there.
Right. The change that, well, I guess we can step through it. I'm going to redo the Google blurb so we can figure out what this is. What are we talking about here?
Yeah.
The Gamesters of Triskelion. Captain Kirk, Chekov, and Uhura are transported off the Enterprise and become gladiators who are forced to fight for the amusement of Triskelion's rulers.
Boing.
Simple.
Yeah, I mean, it starts out, they're going down to check out something.
right.
I don't, it doesn't planet. Really matter.
It's a relay station or unmanned relay station or something in there. I guess the three of them. No, I do think, right. Was it a communications relay? So maybe Uhura makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. It's
right. Why does the captain go?
Standard orbit around Gamma-2, an uninhabited planetoid with an automatic communications and astrogation station. So communication is an astrogation station.
Astrogation station. What is astrogation again?
Astrogation station.
So like navigation, but in space.
Gotcha. Dead thing. Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense for Chekhov to go, I guess.
Yeah.
It's got a nice schoolhouse. And you need a chaperone to it.
Yeah.
Well, because, yeah,
it's navigation. What's your station? Yeah, there you go.
I'm beaming down with the captain and the horror. That's my Chekhov impression.
Well, your Chekhov impression says a lot like Leon Redbone.
So it makes total sense that they would, bring down those two. And I'm sure that they rewrote the script to be like, all right, well, here's the two that we're going to feature in this. So let's just make it a thing that those two would be there for.
Right.
Margaret Armin. It's fun to say.
Margaret Armin,
who is one of that crew that I talk about that goes from from the original series to, it's like the David Gerald gang. They go from the original series to the animated series to Land of the Lost together. She's part of that. She wrote, I think this was the only, oh no, she wrote more than one produced episode of the original series, but then she wrote, I think, two animated series.
Bergus Element.
We
covered on our weekend show.
That is
on
true.
Our Patreon page.
Yeah. That's right. We have a Patreon, abcdtos.com/Patreon.
Getting it out of the way quick today.
We might bring it up again later.
Oh,
could be.
All right.
Margaret Armin wrote, she wrote three TOS episodes. Look at that. This, Cloud Miners, which we already covered, and the Paradise Syndrome,
which we will cover when we get to that letter of the alphabet.
Yes, under P. And which I didn't text you guys because I wasn't sure, but I was.
But we're skipping a lot of episodes.
We're going every other one now.
Guys, let's do Buck Rogers instead. No, recently visited not the exact set, but the location very close to where they filmed Paradise Syndrome, which is a different.
Oh, very cool.
Different, not Vasquez Rocks, where a lot of things were filmed. And then there's one or two other, there's a couple of spots that they went to multiple times.
That one's in like a forest with a lot of evergreens, as I recall.
Yeah, it's more of a kind of, interestingly, this is probably more of an off-air conversation, but it's also the place where they filmed a lot of the water-based stuff for Creature from the Black Lagoon and African Queen.
Oh, wow.
It was a former, movie ranch. Eventually, I think, did Bob Hope own it or something after a while? Mm. And then, I don't know. Now it's like a public park, and you could just go there and wander around, and there's like, oh, cool. And it's like,
sort of like the Arboretum, except I don't think it's public, but I think you do have to pay admission. But
for the LA Arboretum, yes.
Yeah.
I'm a member. And I go there and I'm like, look, I'm on Paradise Island. And everybody's like, shut up. the animated series, Margaret Armin wrote Lorelei, Signal, and the Ambergris Element. And then I had it open at some point, but then closed it. The episodes of Land of the Lost that she wrote. Dopey and Tar Pit. There you go. Dopey being the one that introduces the cute little baby Brontosaurus.
Hmm. Named Dopey.
I think she did some bionic stuff as well, right?
Oh,
I think she did some
cool.
$6 million.
Wait, she worked with Biohazard and Onyx?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You remember them? Was that from the Judgment Night soundtrack?
It started with the Judgment Night soundtrack, and then it went
on. But they didn't put the name Bionix until later, but that...
She did some Bionic Woman and $6 Million Man, as many Star Trek writers did.
It's Fantasy Island. Yes. Speaking
and
of which,
many Star
Wonder
Trek
Woman.
Cast members did.
Wonder Woman, she wrote for that.
Ooh.
With her satin tights and Vulgarmite.
Yeah, $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman, not Bionic 6, strangely, because that's not a spinoff. It's just got the word Bionic in it.
Yes.
Yeah, lots of the Rifleman, Big Valley.
She's been around forever then.
Zane Grey Theater.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's...
Anyway, she originally wrote this. Some of the changes were made as it went, as it got processed by the Star Trek machine. Interestingly, she originally wrote it with Sulu and Uhura. And this is a Green Beret casualty.
Have we touched on that?
It's come up, I think.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, I think we talked about it
Let's
a bunch early
Let's refresh the memories
on.
of our listeners. Somebody.
All right, well, yeah, George Segei got cast in the John Wayne movie, The Green Berets, and as a result, missed a lot of second season episodes, beefing up Chekhov's role in a lot of episodes.
Basically, right. Chekhov took over a lot of his episodes, yeah. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to know how Chekhov would have ended up. Like, where were they going to get him in? Was he just going to be a side character like that? It feels appropriate how many times he's an integral part of an episode to me, but if we just replace him with Sulu a lot, I don't know how much Chekhov's on the show.
Yeah.
It's strange.
What? They might have, I guess, just bumped Chekhov down to, like, we see, a lot of those kind of bottom tier guy. Well, I guess there's even a lower tier than that. There's like below Chekhov and Sulu, you have the guys like, Leslie and those guys who are just like, they pop up a lot, but they never made it into the credits really. And they're just like, or if you're, a hardcore Star Trek nerd, then you know about like, oh, look, it's the human Arix. But
then, it's Riley.
Yeah. But then even below that, you get your kind of like one-offs that have these really weird arcs that it's like, last week we talked about Boma. I had to look. I'm like, what's name again? Mm-hmm. We talked about, it's not Boomer.
It's not Bowman.
We talked about Boma last week where he was like, oh, here's a guy who they gave an arc for a little bit. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And it seems like that's the kind of person you would bring back. We got one in this episode, too. We've got the conspicuous Ensign Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
Ensign? Is she an ensign, I believe?
I believe so. Those. That's what I wrote down.
She is.
She's not
a very good actor.
But she's like totally like holding it down. It's like she's like, oh, well, like while Sulu's away, she's, the navigator.
The cats will play.
And then also like she fills in on the science station like completely, not like, I don't know what's going on. They've had
Calgon.
Not just saying because, obviously Star Trek has a much better portrayal of women than a lot of shows at the time. But also like they have characters like that who are just kind of like there to fill a spot, but they're not totally adequate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, somebody else just to jump in and be like, look, let me redo what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the lines that she delivers for those two positions, those two crew positions are unchallenged and competent. And it's like, oh, good. Like, here's somebody doing a good job at doing what they're doing. And like, I like seeing those background characters pop up like that. And I'm like, let's get more of her. But no,
they run a tight ship.
Well, who is it? Who is it that's at the helm? Because he doesn't have a lot to do, but he's very familiar. He's been on other episodes, right?
I think we just see him sitting right there sometimes.
Yeah.
In the Chekhov spot.
And there's a great moment where Spock goes to, is it Hadley? I have a couple of different names, but I wasn't sure which one.
Hadley's the one that I call the human Arix, who's got like a little bit like a tiny bit of a high forehead, slender guy. Yeah, he's the one who's filling in that spot.
Well, there's the moment later in the episode where Spock just steps down to check that viewfinder that's suddenly there on the helm, and he just bolts. He's just like, without a, nothing has to be said or anything. It's like the chemistry of this crew is pretty good. Yeah. Right. He just like zoops right out of the chair, and Spock takes a seat.
He didn't even have Spock to tell. Spock doesn't even say like, "Hey, Mr.
He doesn't
Hadley,
even tap you know, him or anything.
What are we looking at?" And he's just kind of like. Doesn't even ask him to move. He's just kind of like that. And Hadley's like, okay. Yeah. I'll go back to being the laundry officer. There.
I mean, I say that there's a good chemistry with this particular crew, but of course there's not totally good chemistry because a lot of conflict on the bridge in this episode that we should talk about that is kind of ham-fisted a little bit, maybe.
A little, like maybe shoehorned. Not as, logically flowing or something, yeah.
Something not. It almost feels like they needed a B story to add a little conflict, and they didn't really think of one.
Right? Yeah.
They said, just have Bones be against Spock.
Yeah. You know, this time Bones is the Commodore.
Right. And for some reason, Scotty. We just talked about Scotty and Spock having this like connection. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Last week and this week, for no reason at all, Scotty is not with Spock. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
I've seen this episode before, but I was really surprised when Scotty was like, he speaks for me too.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that seemed why very. Would you? They seemed like school children or something. Like, we talked after class and we're going to go talk to the teacher and we'll be a united front. It's not fair that they graded my math homework that way and stuff. And yeah, it is really, I mean, we're jumping ahead, obviously, but. Yeah, like it's after a bunch of scenes of Spock, why are you following the one clue that we have of where these guys could possibly be? Why are you trying as hard as you can to find our friends? Why don't we just sit back there and wait and do nothing? Right, and then it's finally like it comes to a head and Spock's like, this is my job. And they're both immediately like, you're right. I'll get us up to warp, whatever, 8.5.
The big problem for me is that Bones says, you're just playing a hunch. And then Spock very intricately gives how he deduced to do this thing. And then Bones goes, that's just a fancy way of saying you're playing a hunch. That's bull. That's like so
it is
what we hear on what we hear from a certain side of the political spectrum these days.
Right. Right.
Like, what you just explained it. Well, that's no different than me just saying I believe something. You know,
there's no reason for him to not be excited that they have even the tiniest clue of where their friends might be.
I mean, everything that they're doing is exactly right. Right.
Yeah. And from Scotty's point of view, it's like. Well, like, why not go with the thing that makes it so that your equipment wasn't faulty? The one that they make a point of him being like, no, I checked it over and over
right.
again.
Right. Yeah.
And
exactly.
So Spock was like, all right, well, I believe you and I trust you that it's not that. So we're going to follow this instead. And they're like, well, let's go back and look. It's like, it could have been a problem. And he's like, well, no, like, you said that it's absolutely not that. So we're going to check this.
Yeah. He kind of uses that against, like, not against him, but he kind of like, you know, well, unless there's something wrong with your stuff, Scott. No. Yeah. I told you there's nothing wrong. And I want to say, like, in our last episode, Galileo 7, mm-hmm. Scotty really admired when Spock actually did do a totally gut, probably in 1,000 years would never work move of igniting the plasma or whatever, like sending up a flare. And he's like, he's enamored of that. And then like now that he's actually got a tangible clue that he's following, he thinks it's ridiculous.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then Spock, I mean, since we're in this zone here, one of the few times where Nimoy, I bet you anything Leonard Nimoy was like, why did you use this take? When he gets up out of the chair and goes and says, I'm the captain, and then he bends over and goes, unless you're doing a mutiny, that's the least Spocky way you could have done that. Like, he should have said that as coolly and levelly, unless you're planning a mutiny, then I suggest that we in there, whoa, mutiny, but he doesn't like, he's like Mary Poppins or something. Are we doing a mutiny today? Unless. I think not.
He like opens up his coat, you're doing a mutiny.
We didn't finish our vegetables. We're not allowed to mutiny yet.
You want
to
buy a mutiny?
It's so strange. So
I think that this, based on the, I mean, his relatively limited scenes, I would say that this is a Leonard Nimoy head cold episode because it sounds a little nasal and he looks a little out of it. of which I think there were several. Like, I think
a few, yeah, yeah.
Recurring, either health issues or at least there was a big chunk of them that are together that you can always be like, oh, like, why is he like?
has anybody ever compiled the head cold episodes into a list?
That'd be a good.
I think we did. Didn't we figure out early on that there was a through line between the production order of episode? Like, I clearly see that he has a cold in Assignment Earth.
Right.
And I think Cat's Paw was right before that, and he's petting a cat, so we surmise that maybe
allergies.
He was... yeah, but thing, still, like I think that may have carried over or something, yeah.
Let's see.
I was trying to make a cat allergy joke. I'm not sure if it got through.
I always wondered if it could have been a cat thing. I don't know.
Right before this was...
it's meowing time!
Right before this was Private thing. Little War, okay. And after this is Obsession.
That
so we won't
see.
Get to see those for a little while.
Oh, okay. Well... yeah. Keep our first aid kits ready, well, just in case.
I made session. My thing joke, so I'm out of here, guys.
After
you made like three of them.
Yeah, ironically,
it's like I made my five drink jokes. I'm out.
The immunity syndrome is after Obsession in production order, so we'll see if that immunity to.
Ironically,
allergies.
He was very ill during immunity syndrome.
That's the syndrome.
Oh.
Anyway. So they get basically, you know, Kirk and Chekhov and Uhura get on the platform to beam down to this planet, and suddenly they disappear.
Boing.
Then they appear on this Triskelion, this, you know, landing platform, essentially, and they don't know what's going on. And all of a sudden they're assaulted by creatures, a variety of creatures. And then the Enterprise has to deal. I really
and by
like
creatures. You mean caveman, Jonah Hill in disguise as Ray Liotta, and Silver Bikini Gaga.
Right. Yeah.
Silver Bikini. Yep.
Jiffy Pop Gaga, we call her.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's I guess list two there. First, I wanted to marvel at the. You know, Kirk is like, all right, you know, phasers to stun, and they back up, and he's like, all right, fire, and the phasers don't work. They light up, but they don't do anything.
They do.
All of a sudden, they're like the Playmates mm-hmm. Star Trek classic phaser, where they just light
get
up,
me.
And they don't do anything. But they then he's like, all right, hand to hand, and the hand to hand assignments are like, you know, like. I'll take the handsome guy. Uhura will fight the two ladies. Chekhov, you take that caveman that's twice your size. It's like, really?
Yeah, Kirk has a lot of experience fighting people and things that size. I think he should have been the one to take. And then Uhura gets double teamed. That's not right. Like,
yeah.
But, she does okay.
We're trying to be fair while having the ladies fight the ladies. But it's like, well, there's two of them. And what,
how hard
it's
could
like
it
a
be?
Weird,
yeah, they wouldn't want a guy hitting a woman.
Right.
No, that'd be weird.
That would be super weird if that happened in
that'd
this
be uncomfortable.
Episode.
Yeah.
Certainly didn't in this one.
Yeah. Well, so let's lay out who we're talking about here. We've got Lars.
Lars.
I'm Lars.
That's Jonah Hill in disguise as Ray Liotta.
Excellent description. Lars, played by Steve Sandor, who was, you know, on a bunch of these types of shows. And then he did something. There was something that he was like an almost ran, right? That he was like, I think, is he the one? Maybe not. I thought he was almost cast as something like
Michael
important.
Corleone. Maybe. there was a long list of people that were up for Michael Corleone.
Let's see. He's perhaps best known for his role as the ill-fated biker gang leader in the 1980 cult film The Ninth Configuration.
Oh.
Huh. Movie I've always meant to see. I got to really do that at some point.
Yeah.
Have you seen the original first eight configurations though. I thought you have to make that joke every time there's a number in the title of a movie.
Yeah. He was the original voice of Orion in Superman the Animated Series, and then Ron Perlman replaced him. So
that's Orion. Yeah, okay. I just heard Ryan and I'm like, who
is Ryan?
Ryan?
He works at the Daily Planet. Then we've got we've got Mickey Morton as Kloog, which is a great name for that doofy looking guy.
I'm Kloog.
Mickey Morton, of course, Mrs. Chewbacca. We all know
Mala.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Mala herself. This is what
Mala
happens
himself.
When you save a Wookiee.
But what do you get a Wookiee for Christmas?
When he already has a comb?
Exactly. I guess you shave him.
Yeah. Wait. Love and understanding is,
you get him
as
a,
I recall,
goodwill towards man.
Yes. Or a brush, as they would later revisit that joke.
Or a curling Star Wars iron.
Star Wars Christmas album. Yeah, good stuff. Okay, so we got a club.
Now, he was, it says he was in the Legends of the Superheroes.
Ah, the roast. Was he Solomon Grundy?
Was he Solomon Grundy? I don't know.
I'm just thinking his size. That would be the most logical person he would be.
And then
they
also
do a whole great Niagara Falls routine, except it's that Grundy hates the swamp. And Ed McMahon can't help but say swamp.
Oh.
That Ed McMahon. And he was also Gargantua, the ape in Wonder Woman.
Oh, that famous character in Wonder Woman.
You said Gargantua the ape. With the ape. Sorry, I got distracted for a second because it was like Mickey Morton was on the Star Wars Holiday Special with Ralph Maurer. I'm like, who's Ralph Maurer and why do I? And then we'll get to there because he's in two episodes that we haven't gotten up to alphabetically. But I did not realize that guy was also in that. So there you go. Pin that for later in the alphabet. Another Holiday Special appearance. Here's a not Holiday Special appearance in that I read... One of the women who is fighting Uhura, who I hope we'll talk more about her in a little bit, but Tamun, that little orange girl.
She ain't so little.
Or I guess kind of yellowy, because at one point
she
I noticed...
She ain't so orange.
I'm like, where does Tamun end and Shekhov's shirt begin? I thought. It was a little bit close. Tamun, played by Jane Ross, and Jane Ross did not do a lot of acting. This is
she didn't do a lot of acting in this episode
for good reason.
Hey. I didn't know she was an actor.
It's her only known TV acting role. She was she made an uncredited appearance in Sweet Smell of Success. Probably not yellow, but
who would she have been?
Wait, and, who can say it was a black and white movie?
She was true. Also uncredited one of the humans who gets rounded up in Planet of the Apes.
Part she was born to play.
But then there's an important footnote where it says, like, hey, despite rumors to the contrary, Jane Ross was not a pseudonym used by B. Arthur, and they were not the same actress. And it's like,
what?
Who suggested that?
I saw that too.
She's
that's incredible.
5'5" or something.
I know.
She doesn't look like B. Arthur. All right.
But that would have been another good if Mala and...
B. Arthur.
I can't remember her name for a second. Achmina. We're both in the holiday special and this episode.
That'd be great.
That would be a good crossover.
Well, I looked her up because I wanted to find out if she had a distinctive voice. Yeah, if she was single, if she had a friend. if that was her voice or if they pitched it down or something. And then as soon as I read that she was confused with B. Arthur, I was like... Maybe that's why people thought
they're like, oh, there's a lady with makeup with a deep voice. Must be B. Arthur. I don't see any notes as to like whether she was dubbed or it was pitched. Is it the same? Did anybody watch the original? They didn't make any.
I didn't this time.
Audio adjustments, did they?
No, I don't. They didn't make any changes at all. I don't think, other than the planets.
The
exteriors of the ships.
They didn't do much, which is.
There was one point where I went back to look. I was watching the original this time, actually, and I wanted to... There was like a very cheap-looking backdrop when he goes to see the three brains, you know, the protectors.
I thought that might be from Devil in the Dark.
Exactly, it's from Devil in the Dark, and I wanted to see if they touched that up, because they usually do that, and it didn't seem like they did at all. It looked exactly the same.
Yeah, it just looks like a matte painting kind of backdrop.
And the original even has like the twinkly lights on it and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
But the fourth thrall that we meet here, we'll meet one more later, and we'll meet two more people from the planet later. But when they first get attacked, the fourth thrall is of course Angelique Petitjean as Shana. And I was stunned a little bit by her life story. Did you guys know anything about Angelique? Petitjean?
No.
Yeah, she. I guess she had some substance abuse issues, but we don't really need to talk about that. Career-wise, she became a burlesque dancer, which then sort of folded into doing softcore pornography and then hardcore pornography.
Ooh. Yeah.
Until the convention circuit became a thing that was an income source for her. And she didn't exactly divorce the two things entirely, though. Yeah. There is a poster of her in character. Well, let's just say she's somehow dressed. She's wearing less clothes than she is in the actual episode somehow. But she's like holding the same weapon. Yeah. And it's kind of close to the same uniform, only, or it's not covering any of the parts that it's been covering. Let's just say that. So, but apparently she made, you know, she did okay on the convention circuit but sadly got cervical cancer and passed away pretty young. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Late 40s, 48, 49 years old, something like that. But,
and yeah, she was, you know, she lived for, she read for Nova, which is a weird thing. Like, why do you have to read?
She read for a character that had no lines.
Yeah.
and was the producer of the film's girlfriend, which is the other thing. Like, like Linda Harrison, I think was dating one of the, one of the Daryl Zanuck or something like that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Who was just like, yeah, let's read for this part that has no lines and you'll be, and since you're not sleeping with me, I'm not going to cast you. But hey,
hey,
show up, you know, take advantage of the catering table.
Yeah.
Craft services is always nice at 20th Century Fox.
There you go. I want to figure out a crossover because I feel like it's come up before, but she was in Clambake, the Elvis Presley movie. So I feel like there's got to be a couple of Clambake and Star Trek have more crossover than we've discovered.
Well, yeah, well, James Gregory played Elvis's dad.
Well,
in
there
that.
You go. Yeah.
Well, this episode, it was directed by Gene Nelson, who directed Kissin' Cousins and what was the other one? I've forgotten what the other
not
he did
Clam
two Elvis movies. Harum Scarum.
All right.
Mm.
So lots of Elvis. Yeah. Crossover with Star Trek.
Probably be prepared for ABCD the King. When we go through
A B C D K I N G.
No, A B C D E L evil.
E, just E. A B C.
Yeah,
A B C D E.
With exclamation point. Yeah.
What about T C B?
There you go. We're getting there, guys.
T C B D E F G. I don't know.
Look at the size of this microphone.
She was...
I'm thinking about Tiny Elvis now. Sorry.
She was one of the go-go dancers in the opening scene of The Odd Couple. So...
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's all that.
She here
you
plays...
You guys know the lyrics to The Odd Couple song? It's really... They're really, well, odd. Wherever they go, they are known as a couple.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. I want a separate spin-off show. Let's do a thing about theme songs where you don't know that there are words, but there are.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so our debut episode will be Star Trek. It'll
yeah, Star Trek.
Crossover.
Yeah,
Buck Rogers.
Odd Couple.
Isn't it? But doesn't Bonanza have one? Have lyrics too? Or
dun 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 Bonanza. That's it.
Doesn't it? Like more than that.
No, there. But yes, there are, and it's sort of like, you know, ride on the rage until you get to Bonanza. It's something
right.
Twilight Zone.
Maybe we could do this for our Patreon episodes at abcdtos.com/Patreon.
Hey.
Oh.
We could talk about some of these songs.
We're getting good at this.
But Angelique Pettijohn played, as we said, Shauna. And for a long time, I got into this, skipping to the end, but... Shauna,
there's a joke where she was originally going to play Shauna Na and they changed it.
I was going
to
say her last name was Na, and I just never mentioned
Shauna? Nah.
Shauna Na.
And as Kirk was leaving, he's like, we have to leave now, going back to that dot in the sky. And he was like, good night, sweetheart. It's time to go. And then they all come out like the Klug and all the others. They're like, do, 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 do.
See, that sounds great.
I would love if that happened. I was excited to get to this one because I wanted to look up in my head Shauna was one of those like space seed episodes where it's just like they totally leave an opening for like, hey, we'll come back to this later maybe. And I was disappointed even on memory beta. It was just kind of like, yeah, Shauna, they left her on the planet and then she, you know, eventually became like an ambassador for this planet and She met up with Kirk in like a hallway once, like right before he got on the Enterprise B to die. I was like, what?
It was awkward.
Yeah. It was like, I just like ran into him once. Like there was like one extra like appearance of her other than like, you know, and in that, I guess it notes that like she, you know, as they taught them, she became one of the leading citizens of this planet and was an ambassador to the rest because she had experience with beings from other worlds. She became an ambassador. And just happened to run into Kirk in a hallway like once. And there's no other like novel about like, no, what's up with Shauna?
But wait, wow. Where does that come from? Are you serious about the Enterprise B thing? Or is that something you just...
There's
one that Cameron from Ferris Bueller is captain of.
Alan Ruck is
captain. And she is invited to the christening of the Enterprise B.
No, it's like before that, like he's on his way to go do that mission that eventually leads to him dying in generations. Mm. Dying, quote unquote. But then, like, you know, in Starbase or whatever, like, he runs into her in the hallway, and she's like, oh, I'm here because I'm an ambassador.
That's great. I gotta get going. Bye.
Yeah.
That's weird. Because it is strange, because they leave... It's a rare episode where they leave us with the... Not a primary character, not even a lead, Federation.
There's no...
Right.
No. It's like, wow, we left with her. That's pretty important. That leaves kind of a...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
And
you would think somebody would have written a book.
Yeah, it's a perfect setup. For, I guess it's up to us, guys.
Hey, let's do it.
Well, we'll make her last name Nah.
There you go.
So we can do that part.
But
that should be canonical.
So before that, that was always in my head. I'm like, oh, Shauna's one of those like dangling like space seed type of things. Then the past, I think between last time where I watched the first time I watched this with my wife. And this time, I developed
a real
fondness.
I'm very impressed that you didn't do a Borat impression. But
yeah. You mean the the second movie in the history of the Oscars to have both the first two installments nominated for best screenplay after The Godfather? The Godfather and Borat. Those are the ten poles.
Screenplay.
That works.
Isn't it screenplay? Or am I?
Yeah, it is. Which is like screenplay.
Yeah.
There is one, but
so between last time and this time, I also developed a real fondness for Timon and Chekhov and their like kind of relationship. And I was like, I want to see like I in my head canon now, and I haven't seen anything to disprove this. Later, like he comes back for Timon, and Chekhov and Timon are live a happy life, like. Like whenever we don't see him, like whenever he's not like on duty, like Timon, he's got a Timon at home.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
You know,
I like it.
Chekhov and Timon sounds like another spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
B. Arthur guest stars as Timon's sister.
Right. As Timon's mom.
To son. Yeah.
Okay. So the hand-to-hand assignments are odd. And then
wow, that was like 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
How we brought that around. I was like, wait a minute, you just brought it back to something? We don't do that, do we?
When they're fighting for a bit and they looks like they're doomed, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, boing, and all of a sudden a new character appears. Mm-hmm. And
it's Sid Haig.
Yeah, like
Sid
basically.
Haig, I always think it's Sid Haig too. Yeah. I was like, oh right, it's not Sid Haig.
This, here's a reoccurring TOS bit, ABCD TOS bit. Another character that I think he really should have been played by Vincent Price. What are you guys doing?
Mm.
Oh, yeah,
that'd be a good one. Yeah. We've got Galt. Galt is the kind of, what is it, the prime thrall?
Galt is the guy who had all the steel reserves, who was going to design the major train systems. That's all
right.
Yeah.
Right.
He's the one who's going to do, stop all the looters and the lazy people who are mooching off everybody.
Yeah. God bless him.
He shrugged once or twice.
Well, once or twice. I'm like, who's Willie Galt? I'm like, no, he's a
Bears receiver.
Yeah.
He was on that 85. Willie Galt was a wide receiver.
An NFL, like American football player.
I was going to say he was on the Super Bowl Shuffle Bears.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So did he or did he not mean to cause trouble?
He did not.
I believe they did not. They were just trying to do
because
the Super Bowl
it's weird because they're not there to cause no trouble. So it's a double negative. So yeah. Technically, they should be causing trouble.
Well, they're trying to confuse the other team. You know, that's part of their strategy. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, they are causing trouble.
Get their guard down. Yeah.
Turns out they were causing trouble. 1985 Patriots that couldn't win, could score one touchdown.
Galt is the he's like kind of the lead thrall. He's got the cool, like you could tell. Eventually, we'll discover that the way that the society works is, you know, there's three teams and each one is, it's like Battle of the Network Stars. And they're just divided into three sections, and each one gets claimed for a thing.
There's Walter Koenig.
So Shatner had plenty of experience when he did like 50 episodes of that.
Man, I mean, really.
Also, another thing that would have strengthened this episode: more Gene Kaplan.
Gabe Kaplan.
For a long time, I was like, well, we need to bring that back, because especially now that there's, you know, once they added Fox, I was like, you could do it now. Do four teams? That's crazy.
Yeah.
And but I think then, you know, network TV has fallen apart. But now, like, streaming services, you should totally do this.
Yeah.
All the streaming services listening to this, obviously. Mm-hmm. Netflix versus Hulu versus, you know, whatever else. Like, just do, like, you know.
Battle of the streaming stars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. You need to add Prime to it.
The episodes,
you know, Bezos.
Out.
Yeah.
You know, Bezos would, like, completely bring in Ringers.
Right, yeah.
Like, it would be like, oh, right. You know, in preparation for Battle of the Network Stars, we started this show called, you know, I don't know. Basically, like, we started the show called The Olympic Locker Room.
Yeah. Right.
No, we started the show. We did our version of The Odd Couple with Shaquille O'Neal and Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
See? That would probably be kind of good.
Yep.
That's hilarious.
And from our show 24/7 with Manny Pacquiao for the boxing ring, for the boxing instrument.
Right, yeah.
But aren't all the events like water balloon tosses and things, and, like, you know, carrying an egg and a spoon? Like, what kind of ringers are they?
I remember.
You guys are being silly.
True. That's true. You're right.
You're saying, Shaq,
we're the ones in the wrong, Tom.
Yeah, what are you saying? Shaq can definitely carry an egg and a spoon.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard some stories. I won't get into it. It's disgusting.
He couldn't hit a free throw, but carry an egg on a spoon.
The other one, of course, I miss is the Rock and Jock series from MTV, which I think there's a lot of discussion about how the you know, what the problems with the All-Star games and the various sports leagues. I think just replace them with that kind of motif. You still select players, but then they go play on teams with celebrities at the time. And it's make it a goofy, fun thing instead of
Rock and Jock have like a 15-point shot on the basketball, like it was like a goal, like, that was really, and Dan Cortez was like really good at those, I think, if I remember correctly.
Well, because he got to practice on the home court.
Right.
And that, anyway, we could do a whole Rock and Jock thing.
Yeah, we could do that on our Patreon shows.
Oh, you mean at abcdtos.com/Patreon?
Exactly.
Hey, we have a Patreon? I didn't know that.
Galt.
Is there any place on Facebook where our fans can join together and have conversations?
It's called, I think it's called like the house. Wait,
it's the engineering booth.
The engineering
space area.
It's
the rec room.
Yeah.
Nerd chatterbox. Rec.
The breeding room. No.
The arboretum.
No, it's not called the breeding room. That's
it's not called the. Well, there is. You know, there must be one.
On Triskelion, there must be one.
Yes.
Galt, of Triskelion.
Galt is played by Joseph Ruskin, who is in a million things, including he's like this high level Star Trek guest star. With he's at, like, you know, with Majel Barrett and John Colicos and all these guys, like, you know, he appeared in every Trek except TOS, it seems like.
No, he did appear in TOS. He's in this episode we're talking about.
I mean
TNG.
Everything except what we just saw him in.
I totally accepted that.
No, except Next Gen. He was in original series Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise. I guess he hasn't been in Discovery because he's been busy being dead for the last 8 years.
Well, that's a lot of work.
Once he gets over that, I'm sure he'll show up.
But odd that he got, like, you know, almost every. Including a movie too. Like, he was in Insurrection.
A movie.
He was in Gamesters or Triskelion. He played a Klingon in Deep Space Nine. including the wonderfully titled Looking for Parmach in All the Wrong Places. He played a Cardassian informant in Deep Space Nine. He played just a random officer in Insurrection, a Vulcan master in Voyager, and a Suliban doctor in Enterprise. Mm. But then also was in, like, The Magnificent Seven and, you know, To Serve Man, the Twilight Zone episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Time Tunnel.
Spoiler, it's a cookbook.
Yeah.
Ow.
And some, you know, Mission Impossible, Land of the Giants, stuff like that. Also, Planet of the Apes TV show. Mm. And then up to, it's like, oh, yeah, he's in all this stuff from, like, the 60s and 70s. Oh, and also Scorpion King. It's like, oh, okay.
Scorpion King.
Huh. With The Rock. Who is now on an Amazon TV show because they're prepping for Battle of the Network Stars. No, he's on a network show.
Yes, he's on a network show.
Right.
Which, off mic, we should discuss at some level.
Yeah. Let's get through this one first. Here's a question about Galt. You think his makeup was supposed to look like that, or is it strictly a standard definition translation? Because it looks very splotchy and white, which
he looks like he has some weird, like, eczema or something like
that. Yeah, it's got scabies.
And I like it. It works. It makes him kind of creepy.
Yeah, it does make him creepy, which he's supposed to be, but is that intentional, or was it supposed to just look pale?
It looks like he's glazed, like...
like literally, yeah.
Yeah.
He's
been
glazing, man.
Probably some of that too.
For those of you listening at home and not on this Skype call, this Zoom call, I made the I'm smoking reefer hand gesture.
Right.
Yeah. Humor.
More or less.
But he was definitely supposed to be Ming the Merciless, right? I think that's
Sure.
Yeah,
he's verified kind of information.
You think he's from the same planet as Ming? Do you think Galt from Mongo?
From Mongo?
Yeah. Galt from
Ming
Mongo.
Ming stole my look. Yeah.
Can't say anything to him because he'll have you killed. But
he's merciless.
Mm-hmm.
Get myself killed.
And so then they get kind of, captured. They get put... There's a really interesting shot, like, not... interesting, but there's a funny
easy Petey.
It's a little bit
interesting.
It's not thought-provoking, but it's a weird take that they do. So, like, Galt shows up and there's a commercial break there, but right before that there's like a thing where
it's clobbering time.
They go Galt is talking to them, explaining what's going on, and what's the name? Leon? No, who's the, Lars? Lars just like
Lars.
Reaches
Leon
and takes Chekhov's phaser off his belt, and Chekhov has a look of like, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" And like, he's the only one that happens to until like a little bit later. Then like the scene changes a little bit, and I think Timon takes Shauna takes Uhura's also, but there's a weird like. Wait a minute. Why is Lars just taking Chekhov's phaser out of the blue? While they're having a conversation, the look that Chekhov gives him is more just like, "Hey, man, I'm talking here," and not like,
right.
not like "What are you doing?"
Line.
Like, he's not like upset. He's just like, "Hey, come on, rude."
We rehearsed this.
And then they get put into prison. Lars was originally.
Leon,
as written, was originally supposed to be I think the actor who ends up the unnamed actor who appears later on as a humanoid Thrall. He's not named, even though I thought he was. I thought they gave him a name when they say something, but there's another guy who shows up who's a kind of a taller African American gentleman. Originally, he was supposed to be the Thrall that was in the Lars spot. That was also the one kind of who was chosen for Uhura. And then Robert Justman, who had not left the series at this point, he stepped in and he was like, "Hey, like, what? Like, let's not do this kind of separate but equal, like, you know, black people for black people thing. Like, we had a lot of like weird crazy aliens here, but like, you know, like let's just can we not do that?" And so they just made him a creepy white guy.
They said, now that we got that settled, commence the attempted rape.
Yeah.
Let's get down to business.
Was it just attempted? That was not clear. That, like,
well, I think they broke for commercial, which makes it a little bit strange.
But,
it's a little,
but when
it's
they come
loaded.
Back, she, like, Uhura's holding the metal pitcher, and the implication that I read was that she bonked him on the head, and he, you know, and that made him step off.
I think she fought him off. Yeah, I think she kept her honor. I think
she kind of adjusts. He kind of adjusted his clothes.
Right.
Which is old school movie code for I'm not kidding. That's kind of like
when you kind of do it, it sort of reminds me of like nervous Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, there's a little Dangerfield. I was trying to make it
with a horror over here.
little known fact about Dangerfield.
Oh man, it was a bad day.
But he's annoyed though. He's like he's ticked off.
Yeah.
I think he's been.
But
and it could go either way. It could go. He was annoyed because he had to fight. For it, or it
or his
could
right
be
to party,
yeah, or it could be that he's annoyed because he didn't get she did really reject him, which is what I choose to believe because it's
Me too.
No, that makes the show have one less rape.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. and to then not ever really acknowledge it for the rest of the episode and so on would have been troubling for sure. Right. So no, definitely. I don't think. But to cut to commercial right there to make rape a cliffhanger.
That's thanks, 60s.
A little weirded out by that.
Yeah,
right.
Also, who is Lieutenant Jahira? at that commercial, what's happening to Lieutenant Jahira? It's like, wait, really?
Yeah,
who's
He really mispronounces it. He's like it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was confused for a second.
Me too. I rewound it. He still says Jahira.
That would be great if, like,
it's Canadian.
Sudden, like, you know, like, a red shirt pops out. Like, what? What? Oh, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm over here.
I'm good.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Waiting for my thrall.
So
nobody.
Okay,
was
so they're all.
For me.
Yeah.
Technically, nobody all these characters are called drill thralls. Have we said that yet?
Yes. Well, they're assigned to their, you know, that's like their trainer. You know,
yeah. So like
the trainers
drill sergeant.
Are called drill thralls. Yeah. Yeah.
So Shauna is assigned to Kirk and he's like, awesome. You know, like I know how to deal with this. Like he should have been assigned. They should have figured out that he should not have been assigned to her.
Yeah.
There should have been someone.
Lars.
Yeah. He should have gotten Lars or Mala. Yeah. So, of course, we proceed to the story point, the regularly used story point of Kirk is going to sexually manipulate someone to get out of trouble.
Yeah.
And I will say, Pete, we're supposed to keep an eye out for song lyrics, song titles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She does say, what is love?
Yeah.
And I immediately said, baby, don't hurt me.
I wrote it down. Yeah. I was like, oh, we got one.
I actually wrote, we have two because there's also a D Light song called What is Love?
No. Oh, nice.
Ooh.
What is love?
I went,
I not know that.
It's a good one.
I was like Annie Potts and Ghostbusters when that happened. I was like, we got one. And I wrote it down.
How do I
not
know that D Light song? I used to listen to them a lot.
I don't know how I do know it. It's on that record, that one.
The
record.
One?
Dewdrops in the Garden.
Well, there was a few more that were much more like rave culture centric rec albums that didn't really go mainstream at all, but
right,
like Dewdrops in the Garden.
I don't know if I was being naive or if I was just trying to be a good podcaster and wonder, is Kirk like is there a yes, he's manipulating her, obviously he's trying to use her to get out of there somehow, whatever that means,
that scamp.
But is there anything that like is there am I supposed to think that there's anything going on there that he actually cares about her in some way? That's all the answer I needed.
He doesn't, it's not, no, it's the feeling for her isn't the same. It's not reciprocated. It's not the same level, but I do think I think he does legitimately feel bad about having to do that. I think that the way Kirk plays or way Shatner plays it when he like hauls off and hits her in the face and knocks her out, you know,
I have to say, please don't judge me. I feel like I'm getting a reputation for making excuses for people either roughing up or mistreating women on the show. But I laughed out loud when he punched her in the face. It comes out of nowhere. It is straight out of nowhere.
It's so bizarre. And the sound effect and everything about it is so bizarre.
But like, it doesn't come out of nowhere, because before, like, I literally thought, like, when she brings the meal and he takes off the tray, and he's like, look, that's beautiful. And he shows her reflection. And it's like, oh, he's going to clock her with that tray. Like,
oh, no, the tray. I thought for sure he was going to hit her with that tray.
And then it was like, oh, okay. Like, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't.
Here, put your hand
like
over your face. If it's bigger than your
That would have been way too comedic. Like, her face is imprinted through it or whatever.
Yeah. But it's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes later, then he actually does hit her. I was like, that. I had let my guard back down already. And I was like, yeah.
Well, so but to insane. Get back to Creepy Kirk, let's talk about Creepy Kirk a little bit. So she gets zapped by the collar and he's like, stop doing that. You're killing her. Right. And she's confused by this. She's like, what? Why did you put yourself out there for me? He's like, well, it's a custom of our people to help others in need. And then he kisses her. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, what? My immediate thought was like, it's also a custom for us to be reciprocated for such help, if you know what I mean. Nah, she's like, whoa, that was weird.
Pay the
and then she says, is that also helping? He's like, well, sort of. What does he say?
You could
call it that. That's like super creepy.
Blushing. Yeah.
Pickup line crap. It's like, whoa, why did the kissing stuff even have to happen? Couldn't they?
So
it would just
say
been
creepy,
thanks for helping
you mean
me.
Suave and cool, right?
I guess.
Well,
Kirky.
In Gene Roddenberry's mentality, mm-hmm. Yeah, but in ours, no.
Yeah.
See, it really should have just been he helped her. She appreciates that. That's enough to for her to drop her guard. She doesn't have to be sexually attracted to him to drop her guard. But they
I don't
think
know if you've
that
ever
every
seen
single
a show
time.
Called Star Trek, but
I
yes,
have
actually.
No,
she does
I don't
seem to
agree.
Be sexually attracted to Kirk because it happens in literally every episode.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Is they didn't have to do that. Why? There's no excuse for it, really. And it's just kind of like in this case, it's like it almost feels like, well, we have to do it this way. This is how it works on this show.
Yeah, this is how men and women.
It's like, man, this one's even farther from necessary than a lot of the other instances where they use it.
It's like it's a tool in it's a tool in his toolbox. It's like,
a trap.
You know, Spock has his logic. Kirk has like, oh, I can seduce people and get information to get us to save the crew or to save me or to save the crew. That's a thing that like it's an absolute technique.
Yeah,
I really do think that helping her and that's being an entirely new concept to her is enough to break down her defenses and get the information. I'm saying that he just takes it that one extra step for no reason.
Yeah.
He's
just used to it. It's like, oh, this is what happens, right? When I teach about the touching of the lips. That's what I, which by the way, I think this is the third time in alphabetical order that either Kirk or the crew of the Enterprise have taught a you know innocent race about the touching of lips.
Right.
We have the apple and we have by any other name. And now we got this one.
There's going to be a weird, like, you know, reckoning down the line. There's like in Star Trek, in, you know, like next gen era or you know, there's like a weird social media phenomenon. Like, did you know, like, you know, if you're from this planet, like,
yeah.
Kissing everybody on this planet is, person. Get ready to have your mind blown. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. So
the Triskelions have technically kissed the people on the apple, and you know by you know the commutative properties. Yeah.
That almost looks like Timoon. It could be one of those people, but
A
little different.
Kinda. Does she have antenna somewhere? Something.
I guess we'll find out.
She had that puffy hair though.
In my fan fiction,
Chekhov will find out.
Speaking of antenna, we do get so that we mentioned the main four thralls. We mentioned Galt. We mentioned the other guy who shown up to make an example made out of. Who it's weird that we don't know who he is, even though this isn't his only appearance. He'll come back. We'll see him again in Mirror Mirror, just as Enterprise crew member, and then. Our final episode, we'll see him again. He's a cadet on Argelius IV in Wolf in the Fold. So,
You know, speaking of Mirror Mirror, did you notice the daggers are the same as the Terran Empire's?
Oh,
exactly. The
it's economical.
There's a bunch of stuff that's reused in this, which is a good indicator. Maybe that's why we think it's third season.
More third season. I was going to say
they use the daggers. They use the
Andorian makeup.
Well, yeah, we got politely, let's call him a husky Andorian, but he's actually one of the stunt guys. He's like the stunt coordinator for this, the fight coordinator for this. And they just threw the Andorian stuff on him because, like, oh, we need somebody else to be in here. We don't want Kirk to to kill Tamoon. So
yeah, they didn't give him even a medium shot, right? We only get him from that high angle shot, don't we?
Yeah, pretty much.
So it was like, just throw that makeup on. They probably didn't even like tuck it under the collar or anything. Like this mask with the floppy.
That's blue enough. Get out there. We talked about the backdrop is from Devil in the Dark. The Triskelion's kind of terrarium is made out of Lazarus's ship. That's the bubble from
oh, wow. Cool.
Oh, that I didn't know. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
So I'm glad something relatively good came out of the alternative factor.
We still don't know what of Lazarus, but we know what of Lazarus's ship.
Right.
It became.
Oh, man. If only Lazarus could have
for it.
Bring back Lazarus as a thrall. That would have been amazing.
Right. Because then I would have been for the Triskelion stay out. I'd have been like, oh, good. All right. The good. Providers. Like, it's like, yeah.
Provide this guy with a motivation for being a character.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look up what when they go jogging and they stop and like, they're like, oh, look at this. Could this have been where the providers are from? And she's like, we don't talk about that. That's planet M13 from the man trap. Like that same thing. Devil and the daggers are from Mirror Mirror. The collars are apparently rejiggered. They're not quite exactly the same, but they're very similar to something a control device that puts on Dr. Smith's neck in an episode of
Lost in Space
called Invaders from the Fifth Dimension.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And I don't know. It really is a hodgepodge of stuff.
Speaking of dimensions, Kirk, when they're trying to figure out where they are. Kirk puts forth the idea that perhaps they're not in the same dimension.
Mm,
we don't even know if we're in the right dimension.
Right.
I'm trying to think if that has come up. Anything concept like that has come up on TOS? That's like an advanced concept, kind of.
Well, is this before or after Mirror Mirror? That's the only one I can think of.
Or the alternative factor, which we just talked about.
Or the alternative factor.
True. I guess you're right. I just don't think of that one as like the idea of the alternate. Yeah, okay, now you're right. Yeah. And alternative factor is a really hard one to grasp, even if you've seen it recently.
Yeah.
Seems like a more advanced concept that you get a lot in Star Trek and science fiction in general, to the point where, like, my kid is always talking about alternate dimensions, like, constantly. That's always but if they went to an alternate dimension, they'd be like, it's so ubiquitous now, that
right,
concept.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But I do like... I mean, that his questions there kind of bring it up that, like, at the very beginning of this episode, like, Kirk, Uhura, and Chekhov have no idea where they are or how to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And Spock and everybody on the Enterprise has no idea where they are or what happened. And I really like that. Like, I think we've said about other episodes, we sort of forget what happens. I was like, I don't remember what happens. I don't remember how they get out of this. They've got nothing to go on. And that's kind of exciting at the beginning.
And that would have been, to me, it would have been better. I agree with you. I think those things are great. But just to have shoehorning in the Bones conflict is like, why not make it more of a, they're together, they're figuring out this.
It starts off that
mystery.
Way.
The mystery can be the conflict. It doesn't have to be interpersonal in that case because it just doesn't work. And then this whole idea of we know, so we're so far ahead of them. Mm-hmm. We know that they've been zapped over across the galaxy. They kind of start to figure, Spock sort of figures it out. He at least knows that this is the one trail we can follow. So the whole time, Bones and Scott, you don't really want the audience going, you guys are idiots the whole episode. You just don't want that. It's not good. Like, if there were a real argument, like if there were two trails to follow and we were like, oh, we don't know which one actually leads to Kirk and company.
Yeah,
and then they clues went along the way and they're like, I think this clue is more... Mm-hmm. You know, legitimate or whatever. I don't know. To me, it's like, man, they did have kind of a good idea going here. And then they sort of put a generic thing that didn't really make sense in the middle of it that sort of derails it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry, I just went like super negative. Tom's like, hey, there's some positive stuff. I'm like, yeah, but it was stupid too.
No, that is super frustrating because the Scotty McCoy Spock stuff starts off kind of solidly like, oh, we what the hell's going on? Let's put our heads together and figure it out. And we're all kind of anxious and pissed off and we'll try to get to the bottom of this. But then, yeah, like Spock's the only one who kind of stays that course.
Right.
And Scotty and McCoy become oddly stupid for no good reason.
Yeah. It literally could have been. We've already talked about how much we like the, kind of the TNG, kind of figuring it out over the engineering table. Like they totally could have gone with that, which I think it would have been if this were a next gen. Well, I can't even picture this. This is so far from being a next generation episode because it's so it's so blatantly maybe first original series. It's like Technicolor, I know.
So maybe they figure out, okay, there's this trail to follow, but here's a problem. We can scan out and see where habitable planets are. There's a few different options. And then they figure out, well, here's the best option, but we can't get there in this much time. Scotty, you have to get us up to such warp. So he goes and does some engineering stuff. There's like all these things that could have happened where they're working together and solving the mystery together and solving engineering problems and so forth.
Right,
I'm not sure what Bones does here. Maybe somebody hits their head on something. but nevertheless, it's like, there's a lot more potential to this episode than they were able to.
Yeah.
I think what we're missing though, is that this episode is about Kirk making out with a girl with green hair and a silver bikini.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's not untrue.
Well, but then
this episode was not swinging for the fences to begin.
There's also kind of a little bit of social commentary in that, I couldn't tell if it was the way it resolved. So they're going to fight. They're supposed to fight, but, they don't want to fight. And then, Kirk basically talks his way into a meeting with the providers and then kind of tricks
the wager down,
tricks them into gambling for not only their freedom, but everybody's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't really trick them. He just, here's my wager.
Well, he preys on their addiction to gambling, basically.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that he's going to be able to beat these three people. In combat. Right.
No, it's the best you can do it.
When he first negotiates it, it's not three against one, but then
that's true.
But he agrees with it when the Triskelions, when the Gamesters basically make their rules.
Right.
It's the best he could do. I mean, they just told him that he was going to be wearing that collar for the rest of his days.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Best you could do is get them to at least agree, even if the odds are against you, to let you go if you're.
And we should point out that even though it's, Kirk and company are completely helpless and at a loss and there's no way they're going to help themselves to get out of this fix, and the Enterprise is finally on the way to the rescue, the Enterprise showing up has almost nothing to do with Kirk getting in to talk to the protectors and finagling all of this. He kind of does save himself, which is either cool or odd.
It raises the stakes, though. It gives, the crew are now in jeopardy.
That's true.
Enterprise.
No, it's cool that they show up. I guess I'm kind of admiring Kirk that the Enterprise showing up sort of instigates that, but it wasn't reliant on that. It was Enterprise on that. No, it wasn't. Kirk could have gotten that to happen without the Enterprise showing up.
I think the kind of the hiccup in the plot really around here. Well, the big one to me is, and we've already talked about it to a certain extent, it's like, so Kirk manipulates Shauna, then he punches her in the face, and then they're able to escape, and then nothing really comes of the escape at all. It just that suddenly they collide with this other plot point that happens, so there's really no consequence to anything there. So really, Kirk didn't need to do any of the stuff he did.
But he didn't know that he didn't have to do that.
He didn't know that, but... at the end of the day, we go, well, that's kind of a plot point that didn't go anywhere.
Well, so is Raiders of the Lost Ark, but
it's a little like Kirk himself and Leela in Futurama. They just start making out for no reason. Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that we could have gotten to the, I don't know. I think there's a lot of filler in this episode, to be honest. I think that's part of what we're getting at. And then he gets himself up to the brains to talk to the brains.
Mm-hmm.
What is brains?
And this negotiation goes on for quite a while too.
Yeah, it does.
Kind of feels like they could have trimmed it a little bit. I don't know.
It feels like it, makes sense in a, like, it's not like it, you know, you can kind of watch him kind of grasping at what he's, you know, what he can use. You see him kind of like, you know, like I'd much rather not that it's one or the other choice, but I would much rather see, you know, Kirk talking to these glowing brains and trying to, you know, figure out what he can use as a cudgel to kind of, you know, to gain some leverage with them versus, you know, like, and you're going to have to fight three more guys, you know, like, you know, I can only watch Kirk stunt double, you know, fight a guy in a furry suit, you know, so much. I like it, but I can only deal with mm-hmm. so much of it. And it's, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm going to, well, spoiler alert, I might be kinder to this episode than it deserves because it's got a weird, sweet, soft spot in my heart. But I want to get back to, like, I don't know if it is it meant to be social commentary? Is it meant to be like either like, hey, gambling is dangerous, or is it meant to be like sports ball? Is it meant to be like, hey, like if everybody's just so concerned about sports, this is what you're going to end up with, you know what I mean?
or seeing people as commodities, etc.
I was really reading, maybe I was reading too much kind of like modern discussion of like, you know, like NCAA football into this into this paradigm here, but it
if
totally
they just let the Thals
like,
make some money, take some endorsement money,
exactly.
You know, it
yeah,
would be
come
totally
on.
Different
oh Live man Thralls with endorsements, totally. I want to see that world now. I want to see, because they keep the games going. I bet they teach them, you know, all about, you know, like, you know, freedom and democracy. But they're like, well, we still want to bet on stuff. So like, we'll have games. And if you want to do the games, you can do the games. And like,
yeah,
there's going to be people who, you know, like, again, because they were, you know, they're going to be like, well, I do like the games. I'm good at that. Like, I don't know what this, you know, like learning about democracy is. I'm gonna, let's go fight some more.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Lars. You might know me from the games on Triskelion. After a hard match, I like to kick my whatever.
Yeah. And he's doing
with
now
a cool,
he's doing commentary.
Cool glass of Pennzoil.
I wrote sexy music Tamun when she first comes in to get checkup. It's like we've already seen like mm-hmm. you know like
yeah.
I think is it right after the Uhura scene or is it right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's like. It's like really stressful. Like, okay, this you were being captured. We're being, you know, held against our will and assaulted. And then it's like cut to Chekhov. It's like, here comes the yellow.
I had trombone written down and I forgot why. So thank you. Now I know.
you're like, is Riker in this one?
That was a fun crossover.
There's a thing. Oh, here's two things. Speaking of crossovers. There's a neat thing here where they McCoy and Spock are talking as part of the conflict, and they're like, hey, like they can't. McCoy is like, hey, they can't. They're obviously not here. Like, it's been nearly an hour. Can people live that long as disassembled atoms in a transporter beam? And Spock is like, you know, I've never read a study, but you know, fascinating project. And then, boom, the third guy who's standing right next to them ends up getting caught in a transporter beam for 75 years later in the Next Generation.
That's true. That's awesome.
Yeah. And why did I write down? Oh, I wrote down in the same thing. Much like I was like, why do you have trombone written here? I was like, why did I write Norman Fell? Because I totally think it's under sexy music Tamun. And I think after she comes in and she's like, you know, I've been chosen for you. And he's, you know, like she's like, you know, making a big deal and like, Chekhov, it's a cute name. And he does like a, he blows her and then he almost looks at the camera. Like he looks off camera as in like, oh boy, what have I gotten into? But for a second, I was like, oh, he's totally going to do a Norman Fell. and there's one. There's a when they first kind of attempt an attack and they get kind of thrown to the floor. It's totally a nitpicky thing, and I couldn't pause fast enough because I was watching it on Netflix. I got to go back and get a physical media so I can step through it, physical media copy rather. But there's like they get through. I think it's Chekhov gets like thrown to the floor. And he basically almost goes like offset for a second because he gets kind of thrown to the floor and you can see behind him. I was like, it's like almost looks like a blue igloo cooler There's something that's not supposed to be in the shot that he lands next to, I think. That's like, it's either like the base of a light stand or like something that's like, okay, whoop, back up. Like, because then when they cut back around, they carefully kind of move the camera around it. Like, it's not there when they go down that little section of hallway to escape. But when they first attempt it, ends up on the floor totally next to something.
That's funny. I noticed too, on a similar note, that they make the protectors make a point of saying that, you know, don't, Kirk's only allowed to touch the blue, or no, only allowed to touch the yellow or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's all over the blue the entire time, and they never call foul or anything.
I believe he keeps 1 foot in the yellow. It's much like
in basketball. Oh, okay.
In basketball, you can, if you've got 2 feet in the paint, that's the 5 second rule. But as long as you get 1 foot out every once in a while,
Okay.
I'm thinking we got some basketball rules going here.
That was unclear. That's what I was thinking. But I think you're probably right.
Well, that was they give him those rules. And this is one of those points where I'm just the kind of person, like, they give him those rules. Is that clear? And he's like, yeah, it's clear. I was like, I would be like absolutely uncertain if I understood those rules. Right. I'd be like, I don't know, maybe go through them slower. And you know,
I'm fighting for my life. What's the worst that can happen?
Can I get at least one practice round?
Right.
It's like in movies and TV where people are given this information. And they'll be like, got it. And I'm always like, man, you must be some kind of genius, because I would definitely have to write that down or ask you to repeat it.
Well, that just made me think there should have, like, you know, somehow the whole scenario should have been resolved by a dog playing basketball, because he would have been like, well, there's nothing in the rules says a dog can't play basketball.
Right.
Nothing in the rules says a dog can't be a drill thrall.
Right. It's already got a
500 quite lose on Air Bud.
Have to come up with a clever pun. We used to do that at my old job. We would come up with, when we were bored, we'd come up with Air Bud movies. You just come up with a sport and a pun.
Right, yeah.
It's Air Bud. Okay. Air Bud plays golf, so it's called Dog Leg to the Left, or something like Lap Dog. That was the NASCAR one, Lap Dog.
Oh, nice.
Dude, we had a lot of them.
I'm surprised they didn't do that one. It seems like that would be money.
They might have. There's a lot more Air Bud movies than you realize.
I know, but no. Oh boy. Not that
I believe
realize.
There's...
Than most there's people also, realize, certainly. But
I believe there's a dog... Agent Cody Banks. Do you remember this short-lived series?
Yeah.
There is now a dog called Agent Cody Barks, and they're doing the same thing.
Which that franchise lost
and
its
I think
way.
But I think they're like Christian movies. I believe Dean Cain is in them. Yeah. Anyway, we don't need to keep talking about that. Yeah. Dog movies.
Moving right along.
Speaking of a dog of an episode, let's get back to Jamesters. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I had any last notes. But I did laugh at the... Well, obviously, I laughed when Kirk hit her. And again, not because abuse is funny, but it just was so out of the blue.
It was just funny this time.
Yeah. But
it's a situational thing.
Definitely.
It is.
There's like the moment, it's kind of, you know, early on, maybe near the end of Act 1 of this, or I don't know how we break it down that way, but... it's where, like, Uhura isn't true. They're like, hey, you go, we're going to fight him. You fight him. And Uhura's like, no, I'm not going to fight him. And they're like, oh, you're insubordinate. Now you were going to punish you. And for half a second, I cringed, because, like, wait, they're not going to. They've already got a black woman here as a slave. They're not going to. But then Kirk was like, no, I'm responsible for my crew. Like, you know, like, I'll do it. And they're like, okay. Well, then you're going to be the target and we're going to fight you instead. And like, and he's like, huh? And he like kind of gives Uhura a look of like, what'd you get me into? Like, come on. You couldn't have just stabbed a guy for old time's sake?
Yeah, come on. What's he do you? I should say, Bill Shatner did a lot of nice stunt work in these fights. There's like a lot of like tumbling and rolling and flipping and fighting and stuff that he's doing. And it's clearly him, and good for him.
Well, we remember from Charlie X that he can do those tumbles.
That is true. He's
he can
kept
drop
up with
to
those.
His back and just do a whole flip.
Yeah.
No, the slaps doubling. The butt.
Even without ribs and wet pants.
The stunt doubles weren't as egregious as they have been in the past. And a lot of times the main actors did seem to be doing the hand-to-hand stuff, which was nice to see. It was still, it may not have been the deftest hand-to-hand stuff I've ever seen in my life, but you know, at least they're doing it.
Yeah. They shot so much of that fighting from that high angle.
Man. Mm-hmm.
So it was such a high angle that I swear it's like grainy. Like the like, yeah.
Like you don't have to swear. It's grainy.
Yeah, it's strange. Like they must have been on a big sound stage to do that.
They shot it from
that distance.
Yeah,
that's got to look like satellite footage.
See, if they had done that after, if they had been like, oh, we're like, because there's that weird, you know, just like is it the Menagerie or the Cage where they're just like, we will now allow you to watch, like, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, right.
Oh, no, Arena. Sorry, yeah. That's it. Although, don't they also do, I don't know.
There's a few of them.
I think they might, yeah.
Where it's like, we don't feel like explaining it, so everybody just watch the TV show.
Just look. See what happens.
But if they would have done, you know, only saved all the grainy stuff for then it would have made more sense. Yeah. Like, oh, that's the view from the Enterprise. Hey, but instead, they're just kind of
everybody's
like,
eating popcorn, watching the fight.
Hmm. There is, speaking of the stunts, there is apparently a scene, an outtake where the Kirk stunt double, he did like a flip and split his pants. And so, I have no idea what to categorize this as.
Hmm.
I guess
engineering?
It's engineering.
It needs work.
It does need a little better. Work.
See,
and Scotty does get it up to 9.3 or whatever warp. I don't know.
Maybe a wee bit higher.
I'm going to be.
Maybe a wee bit.
I don't know. I can't because weirdly, I'm not like, I don't disagree with you, but I don't see those faults as faults necessarily. Like, I was totally engaged with this whole episode and I love the bright colors. Like, we've talked about that a couple times. Like, the, you know, the part of what makes Star Trek is like, can't be bright colors. And this totally has that, like, in spades. Like,
yeah, they're not skimping on color.
Right.
Yeah.
And it, you know, even though there's a, like, it manages to combine both, like, Kirk wins the day by actually, you know, punching and also then kind of like, you know, the computer kung fu kind of thing of, you know, like, tricking. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, I gotta tell you what, like.
Sexual manipulation, too, don't forget.
Oh, yeah.
He uses all of his specialties.
All of his tools. Punching.
His magic deck gets played out.
Yeah. And so in a weird sense, like, I'm like, oh, this is very, like, I'm never, like, you know, I wasn't bored by this, and I wasn't, I have a weird nostalgia for this in that I think this is perhaps, like, one, you know, we talk a lot about that kind of, you know, the cycle of episodes on the public television station and going through, and I think this is one where it's just, like, I was, you know, playing along, recording them all, and then kind of, you know, lost touch with it for a little while. And then when it came back around in like a year and I went back and I was like, oh, good. Like, I'll finally get Trouble with Tribbles and stuff. And then I got Trouble with Tribbles. And then I got this. And I was like, what the heck is this? This is so like brightly colored and weird. And I love it. And again, now I have a weird, you know, like a fondness for some of these characters. And I'm not going to, I can't accurately judge this to my classification because I'm going to be liking it too much. I'm going to be unfair. I'm going to be unfair in a positive way. So that's why I'm also not going to go first in giving it a grade.
Oh.
So a crew assignment TBD, categorization TBD, but somebody give it a grade so that I can disagree with you.
I could give it. I was having a hard time deciding what to give it and even where in the whole range of letters it would be. And I think it's sort of like a B- for me, maybe. Like it's got all the bells and whistles of a lot of kind of basic Star Trek, which is nice. But then some of those bells and whistles are kind of clunky. Like it's got the Bones and Spock stuff, but it doesn't really make sense. And it's got Kirk, you know, teaching the touching of lips to an alien lady with green hair, but I don't really know why he's doing it. And then he punches her in the face later. But so yeah, like it's fun and cool and weird. And I do like the setup where you have no idea how they're going to get out of it, and then they finally do. But yeah, there's enough weird about it and questionable about it that, I don't know. I'll say B-, but if somebody inspires me before we, you know, bang the gavel on the grading process, maybe I'll go up to a B, but we'll see.
Okay, I'm giving it a C+. My big issue is this episode really feels like Star Trek by numbers.
Color by numbers.
Yes.
Sounds great.
But there is, you know, it's just like there's a lot of things I've seen before in different versions. Like even the music is borrowed. So much of the like the matte painting is borrowed. The knives are borrowed. Like I've just it is sort of like there's nothing wrong with the episode. I mean, there's a lot wrong. There's nothing wrong that I really that makes me dislike the episode. But I don't there isn't a lot of originality to the episode. It just kind of feels like it's there. Yeah, like even the weird weapons, I was like, oh, Mach Tam. You know, they're not the they're not the exact weapons, but like they have that feel to it. Yeah, it's just it's sort of like, yeah, you know, I can go for a C plus and you know, and the plus comes from Shatner playing it for the cheap seats, and it's a lot of bright colors. Like we didn't really talk about this, but like Shatner's performance in this episode is bonkers. Like he's directly looking into the camera and gesticulating for half the time. It is insane. And I like that. So yeah, that gives it a solid C plus for me.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna give it to, C plus. I mean it's not bad, but I found it so frustrating at times that the whole business with Bones and Scotty is like kind of after we just talked about it too, how great Scotty and Spock are together, it just seemed like a betrayal almost to have Scotty like that. And it just didn't, you know, it felt, I agree. It's like kind of Star Trek by numbers as in pick a thing that happens in Star Trek and just shove it in there.
Right.
Cause we need a B story. And it's just like, that's going to knock you down a lot of points for me. And there's a couple other places that were pretty clunky. I mean, it's okay. Like the Star Trek by numbers part of it makes it palatable. It's like,
sure.
It's like, yeah, sure. It's a Star Trek episode. It's fine. I didn't hate it. It's just, there's enough that's clunky about it that C plus, I can't land on a B anything, but so I feel like I'm giving it the best possible grade I can because I don't want to quite reward it with a possible, you know?
Well, I will go there. I'll go even out, you know, like in my heart, like if you were just purely no brain, all heart, I would almost give this an A because I just love this one. It's such a weird thing, but that's not, I can't do that.
A for all heart.
My brain steps in and says like, what are you
B
talking
B for
about?
Brain.
What is brain? What is brain? So I will instead go, I'll go B plus because I like it a lot. I know it's got some problems, but I was never bored really watching it. The way that I could, you know, with like looking at like the other on the opposite page of my notes, I was like Friday's Child. Yeah, that one I just totally tuned out like partway through. Like there's no, you know, at least this is Star Trek, which I know is not, doesn't always work, but here in my case, it works for me on that. So I'm going B plus.
Cool.
All right.
And with that, just like that, we're transported out of the G's, we're gonna start. We got three eyes, just like Ray Geese.
Wait a minute, we're not doing any of the H episodes.
There are
we're not
no
do Hall. Well, there's Hall R yesterday's.
Oh yeah,
Hamak
Tam. High Mud.
Yeah, there's High Mud.
Hi Mud. That's a great episode.
Omega Glory.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's weirdly no H episodes, which does seem like, are there any in the animated series? I didn't even look over in the, oh yeah, there is. How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth, which we covered.
I don't know. How sharper is
we covered that at the end of March. How soon I forgot. but the, yeah, so that's there are no HTOS episodes, not the last letter that we'll skip, but it is the first one, I believe, right? There were A, B, C,
I think so.
G, yep. C, yeah. So this is the first letter that we don't have any episodes for. Don't worry, we're not going to take time off for that. We'll be back next week with I Mud, which is potentially a classic. It's
no, you're Pete.
There's no I Mud.
No,
I'm
you're Pete.
I'm Ud.
No, he does. He muds.
I mud.
He has a big. We've he's got it. A big truck. He takes out on rainy days.
Spend a lot of time in multi-user dungeons.
Amen, brother.
But it's one that I clearly know one of two episodes that it could be. A lot of them, I'm like, wait, which episode is that? I don't. Enterprise incident. That could be anything. But I might.
Women in this episode.
Clearly, one of two episodes. So we'll cover that next week. In the meantime, we already said it, but we've got a Patreon. Support us over there. You get access to us talking about How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth, which we just talked about. And also, we tend to go on rambling rants and stuff like that.
Sure.
And we're always looking for ideas.
We're
not
clear and on point like we are in this show.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, this was a tight ship that we ran here. But always looking for ideas of other stuff to do, and we might do some more kind of interactive stuff with you guys. So if you support us over there, you'll get a heads up and tell us what to do. You will be our providers. also follow us on Twitter at ABCDTOS. As we mentioned, go to Facebook and go to the ABCDTOS briefing room. I know what it's called.
There you go.
I'm there now. I hang out. We talk about the episodes, we talk about Star Trek in general, and it's a fun time. And come back next week for a fun time here on ABCDTOS. Pew-pew!
Ow, you punched me in the face. Ow.